a politically incorrect Halloween, being honest about our differences and challenges, and a thought on tax policy. I'm Justin Katz, and this is Last Impressions 38. It's fun for the kids. A lot of people get into it. Hey, and even I finally caught up and watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which I'd never seen. But I have to say, maybe I'm just getting old, but I'm increasingly not a big fan of Halloween. I mean, at least as it's been developed and as we sort of celebrate it now. Partly, I think it's just my mildly antisocial temperament. You know, all people going door to door. You mean I got to deal with people? Although, you know, that passes once the kids start coming up. Happy Halloween, trick or treat, and you give them candy. It's fun. So that's only part of it. But you know what struck me today, driving around a bit, was a lot of, I think, my antipathy to the idea is that there's just so much beauty this time of year. If you drive around, driving in the morning through a wooded area, that's just the beauty of it. The angle of the light, the quality of the light through the leaves as they change color. It's still kind of warm, but it's cooling off. You're easing. And there's this sort of feeling of connectedness to history and tradition. It just feels like a very beautiful, connected, human time of year. And we've gotten to the point, as Halloween stretches out over the course of weeks, of sort of dressing it up with ugliness and horror. You know, I get the idea of, especially this time of year, in olden days, in the ye old Halloween, that I get the idea of trying to mock evil and make what then was a genuinely scary world a little less scary by making it an object of fun. But you can lose sight of the beauty. I mean, I would rather combat that ugliness in the world by focusing on the beauty and the meaning of it. A dress up in candy night would be great. Would be fun, fine. But you know, when you're talking weeks on weeks, you really start to mar the season. And that's especially true, I think, as we become less generally social. Used to be, you know, there would be country fairs. Everybody would be doing the same activities because there wasn't quite so much to do. You and all sitting around watching movies on Netflix, on the internet, in your homes. So, you know, any kind of Halloween feel would be, you know, overwhelmed by this sense of community and tradition. And we just don't see that anymore. And then, of course, we make it even worse by, as soon as the Halloween stuff comes down, or even before, the Christmas stuff comes out, and suddenly we're rushing on to winter and the next holiday, the next season. And we are just sort of hang out in the season. I guess the image of it the other day in Halloween spirit, ironically, I was listening to, you know, typical type stuff you might listen to on Halloween, like Black Sabbath. And they've got the album cover, I think it was their first album, is sort of a autumn country scene of a house, but there's this creepy looking witch or something in the cover. That's kind of like the feeling I get when I was working in Newport as in construction on Ocean Drive. One of the houses was white, had an old kind of feel to it, and it made me think of that album cover. And you know, it was such a beautiful spot. In that time of year, you got the leaves changing, and here I'm thinking of evilness, and you know, that's, I don't know, not but so happy. Healthy, that is. So I've got a bigger topic I want to get into related to Halloween, but I spotted something remarkable just today, Thursday, November 3rd, Friday, November 3rd, sorry. And I just wanted to point it out. Representative Patricia Morgan, a Republican from West Greenwich area, is running for governor, and as part of her campaign, and to make her potential Democrat competitor, incumbent Gina Raimondo, look bad, set out the contrast. Morgan made a video interviewing people waiting in line for welfare benefits because the Unified Health Infrastructure Program, UHIP, has been a disaster and the governor has not been able to fix it, to the point that now a court has appointed somebody to come in and try to fix it. Of course, in Rhode Island fashion, that judge has professional connections to Deloitte, who set up the faulty system in the first place. But, you know, what are you going to do? Anyway, Morgan's in his video, and some of it, you know, it's not the kind of thing that a lot of people are going to watch all the way through, but I think they should. There's one snip that comes around the third minute of the video that I really think Patricia Morgan ought to have edited and put in the front, because it's politically, it's very telling, and it may have bigger implications. Here's just that moment. It's quick, so you could even miss it if you were not watching the video carefully, but here it is.
It's just because they switched the system too much.
No. Gina switched the system.
Yeah,
after everybody told her not to do it, she still done it.
That's a young Black woman waiting in line, trying to resolve her problem getting food stamps, I think, or some other benefit. They sent her home yesterday saying, you're all set. She had to come, or the day before the video, she had to come back, stand in an increasingly cold line, and once again, to try to maybe be told the same exact thing. But there it is. Gina switched the system, even though they warned her not to. You know, that could be an ominous sign for the governor and for big government types generally. Basically, you know, you get people on welfare and they're dependent and they may vote for you to keep that check coming. But when people are in line, they have a lot of time to talk. Now back to the Halloween theme. Todd Feinberg, one of the hosts of the podcast Harvard Lunch Club, which you can find on ricochet.com, he was talking about politically correct Halloween costumes and cultural appropriations. And I think it's a more important point than just a topic for the season. Give it a listen.
Okay, first topic is Halloween. And the idea that universities are offering guidance to students on what to wear for Halloween because they're so concerned that they might do something offensive. They could do something outrageous like dress as an American Indian like used to happen 30 or 40 years ago in this country, or they could take a piece of African clothing and wear it without actually understanding its origins or its implications to those who created it. And this is apparently illegal in the world of the PC crowd and punishable by death.
All right, so maybe a little hyperbole there at the end, maybe for now. But he makes an important point of, made me think of, you know, not to get into overly personal details here, but it takes a little bit of build up for me to get to my point. But I was born with clubbed feet, and that means my feet were turned inward and then pointing upward, just deformed, in other words. Which is something that comes to mind when I was watching the History Channel show The Vikings, which is a fictionalized version of Viking events. And the leader of the tribe, I've forgotten his name at the moment, but he had his last son, to whom his second wife gave birth, was crippled. And the tribe leader, king, whatever he was called, actually took the baby and left it in the woods and walked away. The mom followed him and grabbed it back. but you know, I've always seen scenes like that and had to kind of be aware that that would have been my fate in earlier days in some societies. But luckily, by the 1970s, medical technology had advanced enough that not only was I not left in the woods, but doctors were able to cut my legs open and construct a more or less normal ankles. I've been to doctors recently just to deal with pain, especially after working construction for a number of years, and he expressed interest in the construction of my ankle. But anyway, so because of that, I spent a number of my first years with casts completely on my lower legs. And then I had a habit, you know, even then, of sort of scoffing at the idea of personal limits. And I broke both my legs more than once doing dumb things like jumping off of playground equipment and that kind of thing. So because of all that time with casts on my legs, I didn't have much baby fat below my knees. This is how it has been explained to me anyway. And therefore, there wasn't a lot of material in that area to become muscle as I matured. And the upshot of that is that I've always had what you might call chicken legs. I've skinny calf muscles and normal thighs. Of course, 10 years after I was born, and this shows you the advances that humanity is capable of. Just within a decade or so, my cousin had the same deal with the clubbed feet, although I don't know if they were as dramatic as mine, but he was born with clubbed feet. And the techniques had improved so much that, as far as I know, it hasn't had much effect on his life. I mean, he was able to become a Marine in active duty, and I could never have done that. Just my legs would not have been up to it. So where am I going with this? When I was, fast forward to college, when I was pledging a fraternity at the University of Rhode Island, the brothers there, they made all the pledges. They gave out a list right before Halloween. I think they gave us a week's notice of costumes we had to wear all day to every class on Halloween day. And of course, it's, young guys and fraternity, they were carefully chosen to embarrass us. I wonder if some of them had put so much creativity into their coursework where they'd be today, but that's a different matter. They were all picked. So I don't remember other people's costumes, but, presumably wouldn't be surprising if I went back and found a picture or something, if there was somebody had, was heavy and the costume revolved around that, an elephant, or maybe somebody else, their nose or was the focal point of the costume mockery. But you get the idea. Anyway, my costume, I had to be and dress up as Robin Hood, which, to some extent was great. I mean, when I was a kid, I think I dressed up as Robin Hood. I loved Robin Hood as a kid. But the explicit requirement of my costume, you could take it as a compliment. I've always felt like I'm at least of the same facial structure as a guy who played Robin Hood in Men in Tights. that might be what gave them the idea, because the explicit requirement of the costume was that there had to be tights involved. I had to wear tights. As I recall, I didn't even know where to get tights, so I ended up, I think, buying green, tight green flannel underwear. it was college. I was broke and trying to be creative and not try to learn where tights come from. I had a very self-conscious Halloween that year, going from class to class in these tights, essentially. I'm a guy, I'll wear pants as long as I can tolerate it. Because when I wear pants, the difference goes away. When it gets to be unbearable for pants, I'll wear shorts, or at the beach, obviously, a bathing suit. I try to always wear shorts that are at least down to my knees, so at least people can't contrast those normal thighs with the abnormal calves, that sort of thing. The thing about it all is that I had a self-conscious Halloween, but so did everybody else. At least if the brothers of the fraternity were able to do their job and come up with an embarrassing costume for that person. The difference is that I could characterize my legs as a disability in a way that others, somebody who's heavy or has a big nose, couldn't. I've been offered, my doctor has offered me handicapped parking plaques or whatever they are, and I've refused. I'd rather walk. I stand at my desk. I don't see myself as disabled. Now, that's not at all denigrate people who aren't as fortunate in their deformities as I was, but being able to, I'm not I'm not seeking to be in that club, to have that as an identity. I'm just a guy with strange legs, who's somewhat embarrassed about them. So there are really two ways to look at this. I mean, there's the PC way, and that is that things that make us different are like sacred markers of our identity, and they ought to be associated with us for all times, always, and anybody else who doesn't actually share those markers of our identity should not be able to touch them because they're sacred. And then there's the other way, to which I subscribe, and that's that the things that make us different are the things that make us different. I mean, everybody has things that are either embarrassing about them or admirable. Sometimes they're visible, sometimes they're not. I've wondered sometimes if I have a unique perspective on this because, I mean, I've got it. What amounts to an obvious deformity that's relatively easy to hide. But we've all got something. And I think, you know, that's how we ought to approach this whole PC cultural appropriation thing. These are all differences. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. We are fellow human beings working with each other to get through life, and we should be sensitive to others, but not raise up things that they're sensitive about to the point that they become some kind of sacred quality. I mean, even mocking, like in a fraternity, mocking can be in good fun. It can also be a way to make a connection. You know, somebody mocks somebody else, that person replies either mocking or with laughter and self-humor, and that creates a connection. But mocking is almost besides the point, because the PC police, they're going after people, not only just for mocking, but even for emulating or saying, hey, yoga, that's a good idea. Tacos, I like tacos. I mean, even that is getting people in hot water. And that's just crazy and frightening. And I dare say superstitious, like the people who might have been walking through the woods expecting a ghoul to jump out a couple hundred years ago. And not only that, but it's dishonest. It's dishonest about who people are. It's dishonest about our standing, reflecting each other. It's assuming that person X is in some ways better or worse because of a quality. And so we have to make mandated adjustments for that. If you think of, was it Crocodile Dundee? I think it was the second one, but I might be wrong on that. It might have been the first one. Anyway, Crocodile Dundee, if you don't know, an Australian guy from the outback who a New York reporter discovers and writes a story about, and he comes to New York, and they go back and forth for various plot reasons. But there's one scene where Crocodile Dundee, just straightforward guy, he comes out of the outback and isn't quite used to the formalities of culture. And there's one scene where he's in a bar and there's a crippled guy in a wheelchair who's clearly got a whole lot of attitude, knocking people over and you know, what are they going to do? So he doesn't see a guy in a wheelchair. He sees an obnoxious jerk, Crocodile Dundee, that is. And so the guy pushes back on that and says, what, are you going to fight me? I'm in a wheelchair. So Crocodile Dundee says, all right. And he pulls up a chair and he sits down. And now we can have our fist fight. There's an honesty to that. I'm not saying we should have fist fights, but there's an honesty to that that is important for a society. And this topic came up in my podcast listening this week again, when Heather McDonald, who's been one of the shouted down conservatives on college campuses due to her views on police violence and the factual record thereof. So she was on City Journal's 10 Blocks podcast talking with Seth Baron. And honestly, this whole clip I'm about to play, I wanted to play 3 or 4 minutes because the whole thing is makes a really important point. But I won't grab that much. Suffice to say that McDonald, in the clip, the extended clip, lists a number of comfortable facts about the disparities in family types, behaviors, academic results, and so on between people of different races. And she concludes as follows.
Unless we address the inputs, whether it's educational skills, behavior, crime rates, we are going to continue seeing racial disparities in our world, but we are prohibited from talking about those behavioral disparities.
In other words, we have to be honest about the results, what they are, and where they might derive from, so that we can address the actual problem. If we're too busy pretending that every demographic category, every race, every gender, only two genders, but every demographic quality should appear in any given situation in equal numbers. If we insist on pretending that, we won't address the reality that, as she says, Black law students don't pass the bar exams as much. We have to make that, if that's the problem, and it is, if Black people want to be lawyers as much as white people, which, you know, they don't necessarily have to. I would just say if there's something holding them back before the point where they're qualified to pass the bar exam, if we, to the degree that we ignore and to pretend that we can't talk about that thing, we won't fix it. It'll never get fixed. It'll be a constant forever and ever fight to deny reality. And, you know, frankly, that's probably what a lot of the advocates want, because they've made livings fighting against racism. And so if racism goes away, what are they going to do? In fact, most of the segment is concerned with is internal bias. That's not what it's called, but internal bias test that supposedly proves people are racist. And companies are spending millions of dollars with consultants to test and train their employees to avoid this implicit bias. And that's a lot of wasted resources. And more importantly, probably, it's a lot of driving people apart and making them concentrate on an area that ought to be considered superficial. So we won't be able to address the problems if we can't maintain, you know, an equal footing as human beings, and human beings who might step on each other's toes a bit. Somebody might say something offensive. Well, maybe you shouldn't be offended. Maybe you should. Maybe that person needs to be told. But we can't just act like we all have to be so conscious. And it's condescending in a way. It's like, you should know better, white person, than to say this or to appropriate that. You should know better because you're white and you're therefore somehow more enlightened. And you can't expect the non-white person not to be offended, so you must accommodate that. No, we need to be able to treat each other as human beings. That's the basic foundation. It's not a value judgment. It's just a statement of fact. You know, as with everything for me lately, you know, in the past 15 years, I find this traces right back to Christianity and the principle that, you know, all people are equal, even if they aren't as good by a particular metric. And that's important to keep in mind. We're all equal. We're all good in some ways, bad in some ways. And we need to be honest with each other so we can find that not only in our brothers and sisters, but in ourselves as well. So real quick, I wanted to... Tax reform is in the news. And a couple weeks ago, Tucker Carlson was on Michael Graham's show on Ricochet again. And he had a compelling spiel on tax policy that I wanted to just throw in here while I've got a minute.
I think the first thing you need to say and demonstrate in your tax code is that work is virtuous. You've got 100 million Americans not working. Okay, that's bad, not just for the economy, but for the social fabric. And so your tax code needs to say we value work. Currently, labor is taxed at twice the rate of capital investment. So if I inherit a bunch of money and invest it, I pay half the taxes that my neighbor who goes to work every day pays. that sends a really clear message, which is working is for suckers. This needs to be a middle class bourgeois country where getting up early, going to bed early, staying married, going to your boring job are all valued, are considered meaningful and worthy and honorable.
Right.
And our tax code suggests that that life is for suckers and that the smart people go into finance. And so you have a country where the top 20% of Princeton, 100% of them go into finance. What does that tell you? That's grotesque and decadent and bad. And it results in the kind of lopsided, weird society we have now.
And so in closing, the lessons of the week are we need to value work and family and bourgeois lifestyles. We need to be honest with each other. And we need to shorten the Halloween season because autumn is just such a great time of year. And until the next week of autumn, that's it for me. As always, I'm on this podcast is on iTunes. Go on there if you're an iTunes user and find Last Impressions, Justin Katz. Even if you don't use that to get this podcast, go there and you know, give a review and a 5 stars, obviously. Or if you're a member of Ricochet, go there and like the post that I'll place this on, and they'll have to pay some attention to it. Otherwise, go to theoceanstatecurrent.com. I'm always looking for feedback of any kind. There's a post there for the links to the extended podcasts that I've quoted, cited, clipped here. So go, you can find that all there. And be sure to visit oceanstatecurrent.com more often, because I've been recently making a habit of finding about a half a dozen or so bits of social media, Rhode Island heavy, but not entirely, from other people, and just putting them up as posts as a sort of sharing mechanism. And so I think it could be a compelling source of continued aggregation, because, you know, if you can follow a whole lot of people. As a blogger, I found that people had an itch to express themselves, and they were using Anchor Rising, my earlier blog, and Dust and Light, the even earlier one, for that purpose. And going from blog to blog to blog to blog to be part of the conversation. And social media has sort of sucked that out and put us all in these silos. So you can get content from people, real good content and insightful things and good shared content. But sometimes you have to wade through stuff you're not interested in, say, you know, whether it's sports or pets or weird jokes or, you know, half naked pictures of people. You know, sometimes you have to sort through all that stuff to find the relevant thing that you like. In my case, cultural, political stuff. So I've been trying to tease some of that stuff out and share it. So at oceanstatecurrent.com, you can find that. And as always, don't worry so much about the first impressions, because yeah, you can live them down, but it's the last impressions. They can stick with you for an eternity. God bless and have a wonderful week. Thank you.